Checking in, vibe checking.
What's the vibe like?
What's good? Corona day 7, 8, maybe. I don't know what the count is at this point.
Yeah, we don't know when it started, so right? When did the clock start ticking?
You guys have, it looks like good weather. You're outside right now.
I am outside. I'm on my patio. I've been doing this a lot. It's calming for the soul.
We just had some rain. First of all, since the coronavirus has been announced, we've had some of the worst weather in Los Angeles.
In LA? Yeah. Yeah, we had some last week, similar weather here, raining and a lot of doom and gloom. And then you're like, what's going on outside too? At least it's not raining, but no, it's raining.
It's weird. It was Los Angeles. It never rains in Southern California from what I've heard on Frank Ocean tracks.
Frank Ocean told you that, or Arizona. So,
yeah, much like Arizona.
Much like Arizona. There we go.
So yeah, it's been weird. It's been very doom and gloom, quite literally. But what you've been doing anything? We've been going on walks, I feel like.
Walking a lot, yeah. So you're familiar with I live in basically the same neighborhood we lived in, about 5 streets down.
Yeah. Great neighborhood.
So what I've been doing, you know, specifically to this neighborhood, I go up to Bellevue and go down, you know, that entrance to the canal?
Come on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And just been walking down the canal and back and forth. A lot of people out there, too. It's a lot of head nodding, a lot of...
The eye contact is
good
weird.
To see you. Yeah, I hope you're all right. I don't know if you are.
Yeah, some weird stuff. Yeah, I've been, I've got a good neighborhood to walk around in. And then, yeah, you'll cross some paths. They avoid eye contact a lot. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not very like that. That's one of the weirdest things for me is that I love to like get into it with people, lean in a little bit, not sure. Leaning out a little bit now.
Yeah.
So it's a strange feeling.
It's weird stuff. But we were talking about it the other day and trying to figure out like something we could do with the podcast to kind of, you know, as opposed to just talking about how little we've been doing.
Right.
I feel like every time, you know, we're usually talking about things we've been
nothing's
up to.
Going on. Yeah.
So, but we both love, I feel like we're good at deep diving.
100%. Harper's Point comes to mind. That's a very, that's a high dive, not a deep dive.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm into high dives as well though.
But we also like, so we were talking about kind of things that we could do deep dives on and, we're talking about like music documentaries. Could you share that 25 best music documentaries or something?
There's been a lot of that going around where people are like lists of like, since we're all going to be stuck at home, things you could watch. Yeah, what's really good. And I love a music documentary. I don't care if I even know the band. I just love it.
It's elevated when you know the band, but sometimes you'll watch a documentary about a band that you know so well that they're not telling you anything new. You're
right.
Like, I knew that. Yeah, I actually know more than that.
Oh, he banged his girlfriend? No, yeah.
Well, here's something you didn't know. She had chlamydia, and it actually came back to haunt both of them.
Right.
But you don't get that on Wikipedia. But so we both have seen this documentary, one of the great rock documentaries. We do a deep dive on this. And so we figured we'd start with some things that we'll watch together and kind of break them down. And this one is The Last Waltz.
Last Waltz, dude. The band. Let's go.
So, yeah, there's a little bit of, here we can break down if anybody hasn't seen The Last Waltz. It was, a concert, film, and here I can just give you a little synopsis here. On Thanksgiving, 1976, San Francisco's Winterland, the band performs its last concert after 16 years on the road. Some numbers they do alone. Some songs include guest artists. From Ronnie Hawkins, their first boss when they were the Hawks, to Bob Dylan, their last, when as his backup and as a solo group, they came into their own. Scorsese's camera explores the interactions on stage and the making of music. Off stage, he interviews the band's 5 members, focusing on the nature of life on the road, the friendships, the harmonies, the hijinks, and the wear and tear add up to The Last Waltz.
Cocaine.
So, yeah. So 1976 tells you a lot about what's going on.
Oh yeah, like I remember back, like when I getting into music, getting into that type of music when I was younger, people would tell me, first of all, it was like not DVDs, and it wasn't out there really accessible when we were younger, The Last Waltz. Everybody told me,
sure.
Like,
yeah,
you should check that out, you'd love that. I remember the first time I saw it, I think it was like 20 or 21. And I was like, they looked exactly like your 70s, like rock star it just completely captured that 70s rock vibe.
That was one of my big takeaways, was how much it looked like 1976.
It's like they're literally cast for a movie. Like, this is what, if you wanted to explain what was going on, this would be it. It looked pretty fucking cool too.
It's crazy stuff. And I think, and also anybody listening that doesn't know who the band is, I think that's one thing too.
Get in.
So the name of the group is called The Band, which is like arguably
amazing.
That's amazing. Amazing.
How did no one think of that? And watching it, they even said they wanted to call themselves
The Honk.
First of all, some of that stuff did not age very well. Some of the things they were saying, but it's 1976. They wanted to call themselves The Crackers or The Honkies.
The Honkies.
People were like, maybe not. Let's just go. Yeah.
Yeah. The piano player. He was super on drugs the entire time.
Oh yeah, I think it was for him, it was a big boozy. He huge drinker. He died. That's why he died.
Well, he although that was Richard Manuel. Rick Danko died of. So to break down who the band is. So the band is, and you could probably explain a bit on the movie, but the quick end of it is Bob Dylan had found them in the mid 60s, maybe.
Mm-hmm. When Dylan was of course Bob Dylan, folk singer, singer-songwriter, known, came out as the Free Will and Bob Dylan, known as this folk singer in the coffee shops and all that, and he found this band and then went electric with the band, with these guys,
and they toured quite a bit.
Sorry about that. When I went on tour with them, I mean, when they first appeared with Bob Dylan, people were upset. I mean, booing them.
Oh, really?
Because they're like, what are you doing? Dylan doesn't go electric. Just play the acoustic guitar. But Dylan's like, I'm going to do what I want to do. Watch this. And
the band came into, and they really elevated, because he ended up writing a lot of music with them and helping his songwriting process too.
100%.
And so the band is made up of Robbie Robertson, Richard Manuel, Garth Hudson, Levon Helm, and Rick Danko. And if you really
sound like made up names.
Amazing, amazing rock and roll names. Like
Robbie Robertson.
Garth Hudson. Are you kidding me?
Oh yeah.
Richard Manuel is the weakest one, and it's still a solid name.
Oh yeah, and he can sing too.
So was he the bass player?
Richard Manuel's piano.
No, he's the
and
piano.
And then Garth player. Garth is all. That's where I was confused. They both play keys.
Oh yeah, you're right. Okay.
And then Richard Danko is the bass player. Robbie Robertson plays guitar, and old Levon Helm over there on the drum kit.
And I think the only one still alive is, well, no, Garth is still alive, and then Robbie Robertson's still alive.
Robbie's definitely still alive, and he'll tell you right to your face.
Yeah, so Robbie is kind of the leading man in this, and so this is a band that was kind of doing their own thing for a long time. Their first band was called, like, The Hawks, because they had Ronnie Hawkins in the band, right?
Easy, yeah.
And so, but then they were such a good band, and they ended up going within the scope of the movie too, they'll tell you, but they ended up going to Woodstock, right, with Bob Dylan.
Woodstock, New York. Yeah, that's where Bob was living.
And they realized that everybody just started calling them the band.
Yeah.
And they were like, all right, well, I guess we're just the band, which is such a rock and roll story that
it all sounds made up.
It's crazy. So they are one of those bands that people know the songs, but they don't know maybe.
They didn't know it was them.
Right.
Like, especially, I think The Weight. I remember hearing the song The Weight. Take a load off, Annie. Take a load off, Annie. Mm-hmm. I remember that song was just on. You know what I mean? Everywhere you went, you would hear that song. It was in movies. It was in all sorts of stuff. I never knew it was the band. Actually, right. You know who introduced me to the band was, this is a good story, actually. In high school, I was in, you know what, Mike? I was in school suspension a lot.
Yeah, you were. That checks out.
But this was actually, I think this was detention. Breakfast Club on a Saturday. What was that called? You'd get a Saturday. You'd have to go.
I think they called it Saturday school.
Yeah. But I came in, I forgot. I can't remember the teacher's name, but he was playing music and he was playing the band. And I remember we just talked. I was like, who is this? And he was like, dude, this is the band. I'm like, yeah. It was like that moment with the Who. Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. Who's on stage?
Who's on first?
Who's on stage? Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Same. Similar. I'm like, no, seriously, what's the name of the band? He's like, the band. It's the band. And he gave me the the essential, or showed me the essential band, and I remember being like, oh, this is cool. Lynn did that, and I was like, good, these guys are good.
Yeah, it's great. And so I was way late on the party guy, because I was probably introduced, I think I was introduced to it definitely through you, but also it is one of those bands that you know the songs, you just don't know who did it, right? Like Take a Load Off Annie, The Weight is an amazing song, and then obviously Down on Cripple, or Up on Cripple Creek.
You better believe it, bud.
Up on Cripple Creek, and then The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down, and then Ophelia is probably their four.
Ophelia is amazing.
Hitters. And so, yeah, that's one thing I was going to say is what, so they end up playing all those, all four of those in the movie, as well as, there was a couple other ones that I wasn't as familiar with, but what's your favorite song by the band?
By the band, man. Man, that's hard. I would say, just from personal experience, I didn't know the song Up on Cripple Creek, and I went to Bonnaroo, and Dave Matthews played with Dave and Friends, and he, I remember hearing this. I didn't know that it was a song. I thought it was Dave Matthews' band song.
And you're like,
and I was
like,
this is the funkiest thing. Like, everybody's just going nuts, like, Up on Cripple Creek. They sang me. And so that is probably my favorite song. I just love that.
Yeah. I go through stages with them. I think sometimes you fluctuate your favorite song, because I probably, when I would say The Weight for a long time, and it
Daniel
is
Daniel Hyatt was there, by the way. I do want to say that Daniel Hyatt was right next to me.
Yeah, but I would say probably my favorite one, it's definitely like now after watching it just last night, I love Ophelia. Is such a good song, and a band that we both like, the Wood Brothers, have done a cover of that too.
Oh yeah, they get it. They're like this, and that's when that comes on. It's like, here we go. They just played. I was there a few weeks ago. They played.
Did they play it?
Oh yeah.
And it's such a good, just a good song. And so it's an interesting band to break down because of kind of some of the things that you'll see in the movie too. The Robbie Robertson definitely felt like he. Did you think that Scorsese directed it, first of all, which is crazy, but Robbie Robertson took like the front role in it.
Yeah, I think there's over the years he's obviously super self-centered, narcissistic guy, wants to be front and center for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely he looks the part too. He good looking guy, can play the guitar.
Yeah.
They're interesting. The band is interesting because they are Canadian. Everybody except for Levon.
Super weird.
Is Canadian.
Because most of their songs are like Southern,
yeah,
staples.
They're all based. It sounds like that was cooked up in Arkansas,
right?
And it was. Levon, they went and met. They met Levon, and his attitude and his storytelling and his songwriting. People have said over the years that Robbie definitely stole. He was the one to say this is us, but really it's Levon is the soul of that band.
Right. Right.
And what do these guys from Canada know about Up on Cripple Creek? You know what I mean?
Right. And the old Dixie. And
yeah. The night they drove old Dixie down. You grew up in Toronto. What are you talking about, sir?
Right.
But he does like the part. He can play. He's a fucking – Robbie Robertson's the man. But there's been a
– smart guy.
Yeah. Businessman. And finesse. A businessman. Yeah.
In the documentary, you could see this band and you're like, well, those three guys are either alcoholics or doing a lot of acid.
Right.
And Robbie Robertson was a little bit more composed, and so was Levon too. I thought Levon was a little bit more composed too. And Levon, the probably one of the better rock voices of all time.
Oh, killer voice,
right?
And that like and drummer singer, which is always just like I could never drum. That sounds insane. Like just the foot, the what's it called? I can't think of the word right now. But sounds like hard enough already.
Yeah.
The coordination. Do that with your feet and your hands, and then on top of that, have that voice and be able to sing would be fucking crazy.
First of all, the lost art of singing drummers.
Not many out there, bro.
I don't know if anybody. I think the only one currently doing it is probably Anderson .Paak.
Paak does it well too. Well, Henley Stotoran, he's up there,
but he doesn't drum still, does he?
I think probably on the easy ones.
That'd be crazy if he's still drumming, but yeah, Henley and then Phil Collins obviously was a big one too. To get into it, Martin Scorsese directed this film.
Oh yeah,
in 1976. So the film was Robbie Robertson's kind of thinking earlier in 1976. I think one of the dudes broke his foot. Did you read into this at all? Why they made it?
Remind me.
No. So Robbie Robertson decided to do it to kind of end things, but I believe it was Richard Manuel broke his foot earlier in the year and kind of started putting like more pressure on the idea of physically touring, right? And kind of what it's doing to them. And if you could believe it, in a boating accident. And he seemed like
boat drinks.
Yeah, boat drinks. And so they started thinking about it, and he and this is also like surface level internet research, but Robbie Robertson began giving thought to it, thinking about how the Beatles stopped doing live shows and they turned into a studio only band. And so he kind of got the idea of doing it at that point. And, it kind of turned into this whole thing. And I don't know how Scorsese got involved, but that's insane that they ended up getting.
And well, I know Scorsese is a huge music fan. So maybe, right. I would imagine he maybe heard that idea or was connected and said, let's make a movie about it. And this is like right in the middle of, it's what, 76?
In 1976, so, yeah.
Scorsese did Mean Streets in 73, and then Taxi Driver, 77.
Taxi Driver was, okay, so he did this and then went to make Taxi Driver. Right.
Let's go.
So, really nothing.
First of its kind. The way he shot it and the way it looks, like setting the cameras up in the balcony and like on the chandelier, like the way it looks is amazing.
Well, and you can see the influences, as we are both people that watch a lot of music documentaries, you can see how,
and just like filming a concert in general.
You're right. Yeah, exactly. Cause really it's a music, it's a documentary, but it also is much more, it's really just a concert, mm-hmm. more so than everything else. They try to definitely interweave the interviews between each song and stuff like that. But it's more just like a concert.
Well, that's the best part, is when they get back to the songs, you're like, oh, this is awesome.
How about when they when they stop the song, it's like quick cut to silence. Oh,
yeah. they play well together for sure.
And Scorsese used a lot of bad takes too, intentionally, which I thought was interesting.
Oh yeah. You want the rawness of it for sure. They're going to make mistakes up there. Right. I kind of wish that they would have, before I forget, that they would have had the wait live, as opposed to, because some of the songs they do in, they don't have the crowd. They just, the film, Scorsese just films it as just the members of the band. I kind of wish they did the wait live.
I thought that was interesting. They did two or three songs almost in a separate studio. And you wonder if maybe when they shot it, they didn't get the best footage or something like that. Because you have to obviously have those songs in there.
Oh, yeah.
But that was kind of interesting. But it's just insane to think Martin Scorsese did this, which is regarded by a lot of people as the greatest rock concert documentary of all time.
I don't have an argument. I mean, I think it is. 100%.
The title card of the beginning of the movie says, "This film should be played loud." Also,
yeah. Do you remember that? We saw this movie in Portland on Thanksgiving.
My first time seeing it. It was my 30th birthday.
That's right. Wasn't it also the 30th anniversary of?
Yes, because it was 2016.
Yeah. Trump had just been elected, and we were in Portland, and they were in the streets. But yeah, they'd showed it on Thanksgiving Eve at this cool theater in Portland. And I remember the guy came on like on a microphone and said, how do you guys feel if we turn the volume up in here? Like we're just going to blast it. Like, the whole place like, yeah.
So high.
Awesome. Yes, very high. I think I fell asleep at some point.
Meanwhile, so loud. Just fall asleep. And it was the loudest movie I've ever seen. That and the third Lord of the Rings. Yeah, so high. We were drunk that whole week. It was a 10-day trip. And that was the first time I'd ever even seen it. So I'd never seen it up until that point. And it was a great experience to see it. And also it was packed, sold out in our,
it was like we were in a concert.
Yeah. It was very much like people were singing, people were kind of standing up, dancing a little bit.
Oh yeah.
So that was a really cool experience to be able to see it that way. So I would suggest that to anybody that can do that. But also, You can watch, it's on Amazon Prime is where we watched it.
Yeah.
For free if you have Amazon Prime. And also, if you don't have Amazon Prime, what's up?
What's going on? Everything okay? I'm looking at you into this thing. What's up? You don't have Amazon Prime?
Yeah, what is good?
It's a prime example why you are making mistakes.
You're waiting to be delivered things?
You're going places?
I can, especially right now.
I
can order something at 10 and it gets there by 6 that night. It's nutty. So it's crazy stuff. So I don't like, actually, you should figure that out first if you don't have Amazon Prime.
You know what? That's all we have to say. This podcast is over.
You're done.
Get Amazon Prime.
But yeah, so the craziest part of this is probably the lineup.
Yeah. If you said, it sounds made up when Murder's you're like, wait, who was there?
Murderers Row.
Even if they just played themselves and no one else, it would have been incredible.
Right. I mean, you're already, you probably already would have had Bob Dylan come through just because out of respect. Right.
But they're just flexing left and right. But
I also think this is something that like almost tells you this is how much respect this band had, period.
Amongst its peers as well.
So we can run through this. I believe this is in chronological order, at least as it is in the film. Ronnie Hawkins, who was their original band member back in the day.
Right.
Was he a big artist? I'm not familiar with Ronnie
Hawkins. I'm not as familiar either. I'm not sure. I'm sure he was. But.
Dr. John in the Tool Hole. Insane. New Orleans music scene, right? He was like that Southern.
Oh, yeah, he was the man.
Yeah.
And he that's really when the movie gets. That's when I feel like I'm like, all right, this is gonna be fucking awesome.
Right.
If it's going like this, let's go.
Oh, I remember being blown away in the theater. Like, what? Are you kidding me? So Dr. John is in this thing. Paul.
Rest in peace, right?
Yeah. He died a few years back. Yeah.
Dead man.
Paul Butterfield, who I'm not familiar with, but that's
who is you're cool. Not? I'm kidding. No.
I don't know who that is. But then it goes Muddy Waters.
Let's go.
The fact that he even flew out on Thanksgiving tells you the respect that he had, right? It's like, right? Are you kidding me? Muddy Waters is coming through. Eric Clapton.
Yes. Does he sing? Or is he just plays, right?
No, he sang it. He did a song. I forget. It wasn't like a super popular song that I was familiar with, but he did a song. Neil Young.
I love Neil Young.
Joni Mitchell.
Definitely banging each other.
Neil Diamond.
Two Neils.
Who just looks like he's got a 10-inch penis. He just like, I don't know what's up with Neil. Van Morrison. And
Van is drunk.
And Bob Dylan. So that's the Murderer's Row of the lineup.
And then they all come out and sing I Shall Be Released.
Dude, no. After they all come out and Ringo Starr and Ronnie Wood come out with them. So that means they were just chilling.
Hanging out. Time. Doing coke.
Yeah, so just a nutty performance. But to your point, Dr. John kind of got it, started getting it real funky, I think.
Right, and then my next, I love Muddy was huge cool. Neil. Yeah, Muddy was awesome. When Neil comes out, I love that. He plays Helpless, and I like, it's just cool. They all like, it's like, you know, they're all fans of each other, you know what I mean? Of course, they know all the words and how to play Helpless, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
By Neil Young, they've probably been playing it in their house forever.
Well, one of the more impressive things too, to get leading up to like Neil Young and Clapton. So you go Ronnie Hawkins, Dr. John, Muddy Waters, Eric Clapton. So think about like those four variations of music, like the approach to, those are not, I'm not a musician. You play guitar, but like those different styles of music and the band was able to just zone in like, boom. It was like,
and be like even better than they're probably Neil Young and, Crazy Horse, you know what I mean? They're just right there. It sounds better than their actual band.
It was nuts. I thought that was an interesting thing to watch. It's like you're watching Robbie Robertson kind of, he's keeping his eyes on Levon. He's mm-hmm. keeping his eyes on also the guests that they had on stage and trying to feel it out. But to be able to just come in and out and just kind of just flow between different styles of music, I thought was wildly impressive.
Incredible. Yeah. They're the best to do it.
Crazy.
And then can we talk for a second about Joni Mitchell? I feel like everybody was with Joni Mitchell at some point. And I think at this point, Neil Young was with Joni Mitchell.
Well, she's never lied. I don't know if you knew that about her. Was Neil, who was with her at that point? Neil Young?
I just mean just watching the way they were interacting on stage. Felt like, you know, been a few weeks going on here.
I thought, you know, Joni Mitchell to me looked, you were talking about how the band looked of the era. Joni Mitchell to me defines like the female of 1976, like the mid 70s to me for some reason. Like almost, she looks almost like she's somebody that you can't even imagine living in current time. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, for like, sure. She looks a listener. Like, I think she's a really good listener.
Oh, she looks very empathetic. She looks like she's filled with empathy.
Big time. How did that make you feel?
100%. She's just got that unique look to her that's very that era.
Her, like Stevie Nicks, that whole look, that like funky hippie woman thing.
Yeah. It's interesting. But yeah, then Muddy Waters just did that song. He stole that song from Nas, actually.
I think it might have gone the other way.
Be the greatest rapper alive. That was cool. But yeah, once Clapton came out and they got funky, that was impressive too. There's a moment that Clapton's guitar strap, he loses a guitar strap. And so he's doing a solo and Robbie Robertson picks it up right there and just goes in on him.
Oh yeah, it's crazy. And
it was kind of a sloppy guitar solo, but it was nonetheless.
That's what makes it though. It's so cool that you see that moment. Like someone else might have cut that out and been like, "Oh, we can't show that." No, that's what you want to see.
Yeah. And then Neil Young. Fun fact: supposedly they had to smudge out cocaine off of his nose in the post production.
Oh, he was smiling a little bit too big. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you could see his heart pumping out of his chest. Neil was gone. But my favorite, I don't know if you had a favorite in there, but when Neil Diamond comes out, there's something about, so I don't know. There's like,
he even kind of stands away from, he's doing his own thing. He's like over here.
It's amazing.
Confidence is key and he's got it in spades.
Confident for sure. Like the most confidence I've ever seen in a human being. And then also the idea that he is, so I don't know. My idea of Neil Diamond is always like, you know, I'm 33. Like I never really did a deep Neil Diamond dive, but I always think of like Saving Silverman, but there's
Coming to America.
I've heard all the songs, but like there's this idea of him that I never really wrapped my head around, I guess. Like I was like, oh, okay. I get that people really like him and like huge artist of his era, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't until I saw this movie where I was like, oh my God, I get it.
He's a G.
This dude came through just strapped up.
I was in the blue suit. The suit looked great. He was there, ready to rock, man. Yeah.
He looks like any song he's singing could also double as the national anthem. And you'd be like, yeah, dude, that's
and America. Huge stunner shades on.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got the look, man.
He banged four women that night, guaranteed. Yeah,
including Joni Mitchell.
Yeah. And he let the band watch.
They're probably playing.
It was cool to see him though. That was really like a neat moment to me. I don't know why, because it wasn't like you could watch this film and it's like that wasn't maybe the best performance, but
or just stuck out to you. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, you could see just him. And then did you have a favorite like performance?
I love Van Morrison, just for the simple fact that it's a quick hitter and he is drunk.
100%.
And I remember seeing that and then seeing Jimmy Fallon later on do Van Morrison, and that's the song. That's the version of Van Morrison that we're seeing.
Right.
Jimmy Fallon did that.
Crazy.
Morrison was awesome just for like, just for like fun moment. You're like, holy shit, this guy's having a good time. But the end, I love I Shall Be Released at the very end.
Yeah.
That's my favorite moment. So I guess it's all of them. But that is super cool. Love that song. And then, yeah, I don't know. Just a crazy moment to see them all up there.
Van Morrison looked, first of all, there's stress about Van. He crazy outfit. He went sparkling burgundy two-piece setup. Like, just a nutty, I don't know. That just, like, looked like, it's just some wild shit you could never get away with now. And then he looked like a booze bag, though, which is cool. Wait. I think.
Sorry, I couldn't hear you for a second there.
Oh, you good?
I'm back to it, yeah.
Crazy outfit, though, Van Morrison. Just sparkling burgundy two-piece setup.
But no one's flinching. No one's even blinking at it. They're like, oh, yeah.
He looked like an alcoholic. He also looked like a 70s artist that in no way would be relevant now because he's too ugly.
Yeah, you got to have a – you can't be just based off talent. You got to look a certain way too.
Doesn't he? He looked like a dude that, like, if he came out in this era, like, you'd just be too ugly.
It's like, yeah, you can play – why don't you play bass or play drums or something? Get back there. You can't be the front man.
No.
But he didn't all –
I can't hear you.
Hello?
You muting yourself?
No. No, literally it went out. So then it said on the, it said unstable internet connection a second ago. So maybe, I don't know.
It's on you.
It is on me.
But either way, yeah, Van Morrison looked amazing. We'll try to edit around some of these technical difficulties here.
Sorry about that. Dylan, first of all, are you rocking a hat in 1976?
I think that's probably the only move.
Hat's a good look for sure. I would never rock a hat like that, but back then it seemed like the way to go.
I definitely rock a Cincinnati fitted or something like that.
Up on stage?
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, Dylan came through. Once Dylan came through, you're like, oh, these are his homies.
And you knew he was there too. It's like, if you were actually at the concert, you'd be like, Bob Dylan has to come out, right?
First of all, imagine actually being at that concert.
I can't.
That'd be nuts. It was probably 50 cents ticket too, right? Like, it was like probably crazy.
Exactly. And then you're like, it's Thanksgiving. Someone's like, do you want to go to the Wonderland and go see the band? I think it might be their last waltz.
Yeah, sure.
Let's check it out. Thanksgiving.
So that was kind of the, for the most part, that was the concert as a whole, right? And then at the end, they brought everybody up and did a couple more songs. But in between, there were moments where they were kind of talking about kind of the end of the road and things like that. I thought that was interesting. The way that they chose to talk about it. It was almost like they weren't really reminiscing about the road. It was almost like this thing has beat us up.
No, it's going to kill you. Yeah. They're like, this is like, it's no way to live your life. It's like, I'm going to die. You know what I mean? Like, this is I just looked it up. They're our age at that time. All of them are like mid 30s.
Right.
And they look like they've been, you know, out there for some time, really living hard.
Ridden hard and put away wet.
100%. Yeah.
And it's interesting to think that was the end of a 16-year run. So they started in 1960, and then this is 1976, and they had been on the road pretty much the entire time. And it also was like 8 years before Dylan even figured out who they were. So they were like just scrounging. They were just
really, really, really out on the road. Yeah, like really working. And then blew up with, I think, Songs from the Pink House is 69.
Yeah.
And that's the weight and their biggest album.
It's nuts to think about that, though. They had an interesting story about getting a hotel in the middle of Times Square, thinking that'd be a good idea. And I know you and I have both watched The Deuce recently, but that was like the heyday of when that was, they were, you know, that show is also an HBO show that was filmed in, you know, 42nd Street in Times Square. And so they were kind of referencing how it was just a bunch of hookers and kind of
insane in there.
That would not be where you want to get a hotel in, in that era.
No, I like the, and also the very beginning of the film when they're in that kitchen or that house is Shangri-La. That's right. Where Rick Rubin lives now. So a ton of history. Cool. Yeah. Later on for Rick Rubin to be like, this is a good place to set up a studio. There's been some incredible things that went down here.
Oh, Shangri-La. So yeah, they owned it. Let's see. Yeah. So it was, first of all, he's walking around it and he's saying, I think it used to be a bordello. And it's kind of like, but you know, you can't really trust anybody. It's like, all right. was it a bordello? Was it not a bordello? And then But it's in Malibu, and there's also great that Rick Rubin documentary called Shangri-La is crazy,
amazing.
But they rented it and they leased it in the 70s and converted it into a recording studio, right around that time specifically for Bob Dylan and the band. So they recorded a lot of music right there in that house.
Amazing.
Which is it's insane to think about the history of that building and kind of some of the songs that have been written in there. So it's nutty to me to have that. Scorsese he understood it because they filmed the concert and then they did interviews and stuff like that afterwards there.
At the house, right.
Yeah. And
sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, what did you sense was their feeling of breaking up, like of ending it?
I think a lot of it was just, we've been doing this for so long. Like my body's giving out. You know what I mean? Like I can't, what does he say? Doesn't Robbie say like, you can't, it's not sustainable. You know what I mean? You can't, yeah. I can't live this life anymore.
Right.
But I think a lot of internal stress, first of all, a lot of drugs and alcohol, I'm sure. I mean, just like they're just completely burnt out on everything. I'm sure Robbie wanted to go do his own thing, make some money on his own. I don't think that Levon really wanted to end it.
Well, I don't think any of the people other than Robbie wanted to end it. It didn't seem like. I think that it seemed like something that Robbie kind of contrived and made it into this film thing, which is interesting. And also, Robbie Robertson kind of made it his own. It looked like he was the leader of the band, which you could argue he was with the production stuff, and he was an intelligent like song designer and shit like that, I'm sure. But like, you know, it was the band. Like, you should have had like the first five interviews are all Robbie Robertson.
Yeah, a narcissistic comes to mind for sure.
It's nuts. And like, there's no,
he wanted credit for things that maybe he really didn't deserve credit for. He wanted to look that way.
Yeah, it's about presenting it in a way that made him look the best, which you could kind of see watching it, which was interesting to see.
Yeah, you could tell that he was taking advantage of them. Levon's this guy from Arkansas, you know what I mean? A little bit, maybe not the smartest tool in the shed. I mean, he can play the drums like the best, but I think Robbie took advantage of him a little bit.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see that. And then after this time, they actually ended up kind of going their separate ways and not making a lot of music. Did they make music after this? I know they didn't get back together till like 83.
I don't know.
Yeah. They got back together in 83 and did some stuff. But for the most part, Robbie Robertson got into like music producing and stuff like that.
Where the money is.
Right. And he also owned all the masters and stuff like that for all the music that they made. So Levon ended up
that they made. It's insane. Yeah. It's actually really insane. He's kind of a piece of shit for doing that.
Yeah. But, you know, business, man. It's just business.
Right.
As Avon Barksdale would say.
Did you ever get into, so they used to do, Live from the Barn, I think it's called. Levon Helm would have these jam sessions at his house in upstate New York. And apparently they were legendary.
Daryl Hall?
No. Live from Daryl's house is a different thing that I'm a huge fan of. Pornhub and then Live from Daryl's house. That's it.
I thought, dude, you said there is documentation the last time that you said that you were not watching.
I'm just browsing. I'm not watching it. I'm not actually watching.
You're not doing a deep dive.
It's one of those things where I'm like, everybody else seems to be doing. I'm wondering what everybody else likes. I don't personally enjoy pornography.
You went on record saying you don't watch it.
I'm still on record saying that. Yeah, I can.
And so Levon would do some jams though late night.
Yeah, at his house. Apparently, it was like legendary. They'd get crazy artists up there and have these barn parties, and Levon's just up there ripping it up.
Crazy.
But yeah, he ended up a little broke on some tough times because
a lot of them did. So I don't know if you did some further research, but. So 80s, they're back together in 83. 86, they're touring. And Richard Manuel ended up calling it quits. Mid
left the tour.
No, he left life too. He ended up ending his life. Yeah, so that kind of sucks. And then the other one, Danko, I believe Rick Danko, ended up drinking himself to death.
Yeah.
Which you could see that coming on. And
Then when they're talking, they're just like some party animal guys, man. Those guys were living a rough life.
Yeah, that it was the last wall. It felt like it wasn't a celebration of what they've done as much as like a it was an interesting perspective, because sometimes rock and roll, you make it so glorified. And I thought that was an interesting way to look at it. They definitely made it look like work. They've been working for 16 years straight.
They look worn down. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's kind of time to kind of move on. But it was kind of – it's sad also knowing what we know about where they all went individually. That you could tell that the band kind of kept some of them together. They might have had mm-hmm. their drinking problems, but it was what their life was.
They had a family, yeah. They had something to hold on to.
Yeah.
Like, at least we're going to get back on tour. And then you're just, like, left to this, I have this huge drinking problem from touring all those years.
Yeah.
It was wild. But, I mean, I love that movie. It was great. Great movie.
And you know what was I was doing some cool this research on one of the stories. So one of the stories they did talked about, they were in this they had a old nightclub that they were performing at, and I think it was the one where like they said that there was like four people there, and then that it was so few people there that they ended up actually getting into a fight too, and that was like one of their gigs
on stage.
Remember that story that they said? Yeah. So they were talking about that. And there's one of the interviews. I guess that nightclub, fun fact, owned by Jack Ruby.
Jesus. JFK, how'd we get there?
Isn't that fun?
That's nuts.
Yeah. Kind of fun.
Jack Ruby, wow.
The man that what was
the man that shot Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah, exactly. He ended Lee Harvey Oswald's life. And Lee Harvey Oswald shot supposedly John F. Kennedy and J.D. Tippit.
This is awesome that we've saw that the last waltz turned into JFK. But what a crazy time to live in. Like, that only happened. Think if that had happened only 13 years before or 5 years before. That's why all that music back then is so, I don't know. I think it's insane times. The 60s, 70s were, must have been a crazy time to live in.
Insane. I was thinking, I was watching it and kind of.
Shot the president in broad daylight, Mike.
Yeah, 100%. And so it was interesting to look at the music too. That all that music felt like the 70s too, because it was I was watching actually with our buddy Chappelle Lacey, and he was talking about how, like, don't you feel like that music just feels like that era? And every era, I don't know, I guess it's almost like art defines, or art is
everybody's taking it from the 70s.
Influenced by, well, yeah, but every era feels like that era, though, I guess, right? Like, yeah. if you go back and listen to grunge music in the 90s, it was like, that feels like 1993.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't feel like any other time. I don't know. Maybe that's just me ranting to an obvious point where art imitates life, and you're just writing what the era is anyway.
Yeah, but what's going on there? Yeah. I think the 70s, that's why I love like a band like Pearl Jam, because they remind me of, not the band, but of like that classic rock 70s sound, also grunge and angry, a mixture of the two with big riffs and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. That's why I really, really connect with them, because I love, when I got into Zeppelin, the band, the Eagles, all that 70s classic rock, where I was just like, this is incredible. This was on the radio.
Right.
I don't know. I know that's an obvious point too, but it was just
no.
Like, it's so cool. I don't know. Everybody felt that way too. I don't know anybody who's like, no, that song sucks. They might be tired of it.
Right.
They hear it all the time, but you can't deny that that was a really great time in music.
Right. 100%. It is it's insane to watch all these different people playing also like B-side hit. Like, some of these people came up and didn't really play the hit that you would think they would play. Right.
Helpless. Neil Young playing Helpless. I was kind of disappointed, but at the same time, I was like, yeah, this is perfect.
Right. And so that was really cool to see. And there's just so much good music from that era too. The 70s were 60s and 70s, yeah, I think people typically say is the greatest generation. And is that because, like, the way that they kind of got together too, like the idea of working together to create a band? Because now it feels like in this current era, you're just a solo dude, or you're just a DJ, or you're just a rapper, or whatever. It's very individual. It's much more individual than it was back then. To form a band, the idea of forming a band was something that was very common back then.
Right, and then to the band specifically, they literally moved to Woodstock, New York, got this pink house, lived in it together, recorded in the barn out back. You know what I mean? Like, nuts. That doesn't happen anymore. No one would go do that anymore, I don't think.
Right. Yeah.
Too lazy.
Well, first of all, we're isolated right now. There's social distancing. Imagine like really figuring out who's in your band like a month ago and being like, all right, we'll start practicing and get this thing right.
We've been sharing straws. What is going on? Yeah. Exactly. I think we both kissed the same girl.
Yeah. So tough times right now. I don't think there's going to be a lot of good bands coming out of the Corona era.
No, you can't see each other. Well, I don't know. Maybe, artists that are stuck in the house building beats and stuff like that, but no bands. No.
Some good solo artists are going to definitely come out of this for yes. sure.
Nothing but time.
And one of the sadder stories though, of post The Last Waltz, I think that you referenced already earlier, was that Levon Helm. He got the raw end of
got fucked, yeah.
the deal. And he actually doesn't, in hindsight, hates this movie because of how Robbie Robertson made it seem like it was just him. And they were like kind of like, it was like Robbie Robertson and then these guys. It's like, what the fuck?
What are you talking about? Yeah, the whole essence, the whole soul of the band is Levon.
Yeah.
And Robbie is just that guy who, like, we all know that guy. It was just like, you say your idea. You might hear it the next day. And you're like, no, I said that. I literally said exactly that. And we did that yesterday. And you're taking it as your own.
Right.
Robbie was that guy.
Well, in a way that financially ruined them, too. And only elevated Robbie Robertson, too. Just, it's, though you hear those stories a million times over, but it always sucks. Dickhead
move.
Yeah. So, but
good
yeah.
movie.
Yeah. But these are things that we know now, right? In the moment, watching it, the movie on its own stands alone, but in hindsight, it's like, oh, this guy's kind of a fucking dick.
Right.
But, yeah, interesting stuff. And Levon, to my point earlier, though, and I'll go back on record, one of the great rock voices of all time. I always say I like Fogerty, Chris Cornell.
Wow, okay.
And Levon's up there for sure. Who's some of your favorite rock and roll voices?
Voices? Oh god. I love Bobby Seger.
Sure. I also think Liam Gallagher is one of the best.
Shine, sunshine. Yeah. Yes, Liam's the man.
Liam's got an amazing
rock voice.
Yeah, Chris Cornell to me is like,
it's insane. He can go all the way up and down with the octaves and like growl and oh, dude, it's nuts.
Yeah, he was in multiple bands and they were all elevated because of his voice.
Yes, but I mean, yeah. Levon's right there with the best of them.
Yeah, Levon's
just too many to name. I can't even think right now.
He's just got such a great fucking, I don't know.
Southern feel too. He feels like he grew up by a creek, up on Cripple Creek.
Yeah, everything he's singing is like, oh, he's just talking about his youth. Yeah. Like you feel like. Fun fact, Levon, did you know that Elton John wrote, that's why they use that name in that song, Levon?
I did not know that, no.
But also the song is not about Levon Helm, but they used that name because he liked the name.
Levon's great. I mean, he looks exactly like a Levon Helm.
I always thought that was an interesting choice of Elton John. That's such an interesting name, though. And it makes Levon? I've never heard anybody other than him named Levon.
He shall be Levon.
He shall be a good man.
Yes. That's a good song.
That is a good song.
We got Golden hour coming in here, bud. It's getting crazy out here.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you're getting look at you. Yeah, you've got it right on your face there.
So are you staring at yourself when you're talking?
I'm reading some stuff.
Oh, okay.
Reading some things about The Last Waltz.
Okay, you're looking at yourself. Let's be serious. I'm fixing your hair.
Am I? How do I look?
You look
do
good.
I look like I've been quarantined?
You look fit. You look fat. Or, I'm sorry, I meant fat.
I've been working out.
I'm kidding. You've been walking a lot. I feel like we're going to lose some weight.
Yeah, this is the quarantine diet, dude. It's a lot of tuna.
Yeah, do you stock up at all?
Still haven't stocked up.
You might want to get on that.
Waiting for martial law.
Yeah, I think that's the wrong idea.
But I think that's what this is all we're going to be doing. We're doing deep dives on things, watching some stuff, breaking it down.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what else to do in these trying times.
Going to be inside, that's for sure. I think it's a good idea. Deep dives and deep vibes.
Yeah, so the last
are you FaceTiming? Anybody reach out to you? You haven't heard from in a while?
Nobody's worried about me.
I'm worried about you.
Zero.
But you pick up the FaceTime and you're like, yeah, whatever. What do you want? So we hang up.
What are we doing? I'm not doing anything. It is a weird time to talk to somebody because you're like, I got nothing going on, big guy.
Right, especially when you say, all right, I got to get going. What are you going to go do?
Where are you going? What do you got to do?
What are you going to go do? You going to work? You're not going to work.
Maybe.
But it's fun. I've been FaceTiming people more than ever.
No, yeah, I've been FaceTiming more so than other times in my life, for sure. Heavy texts. So
that could be a good thing.
FaceTimes?
Yeah.
They say FaceTimes are like how people used to knock on your door. That's what FaceTiming is now.
How people used to knock on your door?
Where you used to knock on your door and be like, who the fuck is knocking on my door? FaceTime is like, what's up? I'm in your shit.
I'm in your room.
Yeah, what's up? Yeah, that's true. Like, you're like, oh, I can't FaceTime in this room right now.
Yeah, it's insanity right now. I better get somewhere that they don't think I'm an absolute animal.
I watched Eyes Wide Shut recently this week.
Great movie.
I watched, what else have I watched that was decent? I watched The Equalizer with Denzel a couple weeks ago. That was pretty good.
It's a good film.
Oh, you going to a different chair? There you go. Oh, yeah. There it is.
Is that better?
Yeah, sure. But, yeah, other than that, The Last Waltz, you got any the film is on Amazon Prime again.
Yes, and you got nothing but time. You should definitely go check it out. This could be The Last Waltz for all of us.
Sure.
So, I say lean in.
Yeah, I would agree.
And the clothes, too. I wanted to say the clothes. They just look – you couldn't find that. They all
– yes.
The clothing's amazing.
Yeah.
I think Danko's wearing a jean jacket. Is he wearing a jean
Bobby
jacket?
Bobby Robertson's got that shawl on. He's got like a scarf.
I can pull that off. You got to be the front – you got to be the lead singer of the band to pull that
off. Meanwhile, Levon's got like a denim shirt or something. It's like
– that he's had for 15 years.
Or not – it's like a purple shirt, but he's got – there's jeans are heavily worn.
Oh, yeah.
And also, how about Scorsese – just bearded up, but also doing a lot of coke back then.
Yeah, first of all, cocaine. They were all doing so much cocaine.
Yeah, heavy, heavy coke vibes. Also, the cigarette pulls that Levon had, a couple of cigarette pulls that were.
Oh, yeah. Well, he died. I don't know what he died of, but it was throat cancer. Yeah.
Got up to him.
They're all ripping cigs. The movie, Robertson walks out, cig in mouth.
He also had a moment.
A few times where they put the cigarette on the guitar, the strings.
In that film?
Up top, yeah.
And then there's also the, he's talking and lighting Robbie Robertson's cigarette with a match. And then he holds it in front of him for like 5 seconds and he continues telling the story.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, this match is going out or he's burning his finger. It was crazy to watch the match move. Also, moving the match very fluidly.
Yeah.
I've moved matches before. They're out. Their flame is out.
These guys have lit many more matches than you have. You met your match with the match.
That's the one thing I realize is I am not a big – I'm not very fluid with matches.
Like, yeah, these guys have been around some matches for sure.
Nuts. Good match movement. Also a good movie to watch, Match Point. Shout out to Woody Allen.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
It's a really heartfelt and heartwarming film.
Oh, yes.
About monogamy. But yeah, so we'll do some deep dives. We'll try to figure out what other movie we like. We'll try to stick with some music documentaries.
Sure. Yeah, let's
you want to watch
mix it up.
You want to watch Beef 1 and 2?
Oh my god. Well, watching, Supersonic.
I was watching Beef the other day because I was showing me and Chappelle were watching an episode of Beef from like 2003. It does not hold up.
Hell no. Doesn't hold up at all.
There's
Netflix, the History of Hip Hop or whatever that is.
Those are good. Are
really good, yeah. Beef those does not hold up.
Beef, however, not hold
Dame
up.
Dame Dash, come on, get out of here.
Real beef though, back in the early 2000s,
still is
a lot of gun bringing out guns was prevalent still then. What is, you are in a backyard with just animals?
I am.
I've heard an owl.
There's hear that? That's crazy. What is grackle? That's a bird. There's a plane over here,
and dogs.
It's nice though back here. You got
this is just a flex.
You got the palm trees. You got the pool. It's nice.
Yeah, I'm in my room trying to minimize too much noise behind me. But you've got palm trees, power lines, dogs, an owl, and what sounds like
a grackle. I think it's a robin.
Monkey. Sounds like a spider monkey. Good lord.
It might be.
So yeah, we'll do more deep dives, and then we'll just try to give you guys some stuff, or we're just chopping
some content. Today, hopefully, so, yeah. Yeah, you guys are enjoying us talking to each other.
Yeah,
I know I am.
So we appreciate you guys. The Last Waltz. Any closing thoughts on The Last Waltz?
Cocaine.
I agree.
My favorite documentary. Check it out. It's awesome.
Is it your favorite rock documentary?
Oasis Supersonic is my favorite. But
I like the Eagles. I think.
Oh man, Eagles! I forgot about that. That's really.
We'll probably do a deep dive on that at some point too.
I like it.
The Last Waltz. One of the greatest rock documentaries, period. Seminal.
Oh, yeah.
Is that the word?
Yeah.
What does seminal mean?
You choose the word. It means the same as tryst.
Florida State Seminole. Let's see what Seminole.
Don't look at it. I think Seminole. Seminole is a tribe.
Strongly influencing later developments. A seminal piece of art.
That is the perfect word then, because that's exactly what it did.
Yeah, because that's what it does. Is if you watch this, and if you're somebody that watches rock documentaries or rock concerts and stuff like that, you can see, oh, this is where they got it.
Definitely Seminole.
Seminole. It's a Florida State Seminole achievement. But we will be catching up with you again soon. John, I love you, man.
Love you too, bud. Let's keep it moving.
Yep. No coughing on this entire episode, too. Which
no, I feel good. I feel great.
I feel great.
All right, brother. All right. Love you.
Peace.